Off the Ball, GAA.
Like the lads know here from Mayo, they know that that's what this Mayo team needs. It's not winning by 10, 12, 14 points. It's when the game's in the mixer, can you go and kind of fight for it and think the boys did it today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Slipped in a name there. You might recognise her. Kathleen McNamee is back on the show. Kathleen, how are you?
I'm doing very good. Very strange to be back, but very happy to be.
Lots of unhappy Arsenal fans that in our comments when Arsenal won the league.
I think there was just a lot of
that you
unhappy.
Did not make a triumphant return, but you're here now.
I'm here now. I wish I had made a triumphant return. I was listening to Owen Shaden and Keith Tracy, and I enjoyed the joy that the two of them had on the show on the night of the City loss. It was just, it felt like a good salve for the soul, considering the fact that so many people seem to be so utterly bitter over the fact that Arsenal actually did the thing and won the league. But yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster a couple of weeks, I would say, as an Arsenal fan, from the highs of the Premier League to the lows of the Champions League. I've been seeing stuttering penalties in my nightmares ever since last weekend.
Some are saying that Gabriel's penalty has still not landed back.
Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, it's so frustrating the way it happened, because I think objectively you can look at that game and say that PSG really didn't look like scoring unless it was going to be from a penalty. Mm-hmm. And to give one away in such stupid circumstances and then to bring the game all the way to penalties and to have two utterly atrocious penalties be the reason why it couldn't have been an absolutely glorious season was tough to take. I was kind of saying to a couple of friends as we were watching the game, I almost wish that game had come first and then we'd won the Premier League, because it did dampen things a little bit in my mind. But then you saw all the scenes from North London and the parade and the players enjoying themselves, and the fact that they had the women's team in a bus behind them and they were all enjoying themselves as well, and it kind of made me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, you get going again.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. Look, there is plenty to talk about in today's papers. We'll go through some of the headlines first. On the back of the endo here, we have Ferguson out until at least autumn. Evan Ferguson's ankle injury continues to haunt him. It doesn't look good for him over the next couple of months, and it just in general doesn't look good for Evan Ferguson. And getting back from that ankle injury, he had a terrible time at Roma with it, and it actually turned out it was like both injuries, that one injury was leading to another injury, and he just can't seem to get a run of form or a run on the pitch. And also on the back of the endo is a picture of Andoni Iraola, who dominates the back pages today. This is Anfield. Andoni Iraola has signed a new two-year deal at Liverpool.
That's so
that
poor.
Is not happening. So that's the only pun that they could go with, because signed and sealed is what's on the back of the Star as well. They also have the picture of Evan Ferguson there. Injury hell goes on for Evan Ferguson. Ireland in action tonight around about 12:30.
Yeah.
So it's actually technically Saturday morning, but it's against Canada, who are co-hosting the World Cup. So that is dominating the back page as well. Deadly buzz is what the Sun have gone for. It's an interview with Jake O'Brien, press conference ahead of that game.
This could just be me, but is it not kind of bizarre that there's that much space given on the back pages to the men's team, considering the fact the women are playing tonight in a game that actually matters?
Well, listen, Kathleen, I was just getting to that, actually. In today's Times, we have a picture of Katie McCabe here ahead of Ireland's game in Parky Cueve tonight. It's part of football. Your time comes. I need to put myself first. So Ireland women seem also do have a pretty big game tonight, Kathleen. They're taking on Netherlands in a World Cup qualifier. So yes, I would tend to agree with you that maybe a World Cup qualifier on home soil against a team that are top of the table is
some of the
probably,
best players in the world.
Yeah, that's probably a bigger story, I would say, than a pre-World Cup friendly against the host at a World Cup we're not going to be at.
Yeah, and a game that how many people are actually going to stay up to watch tonight as well. But yeah, Parky Cueve, Netherlands, still a potential that we could automatically qualify for Brazil next summer if we win the next two games. Now, likelihood of that happening, considering it's against the Dutch and the French, is probably small enough. But Ireland have always had a lot of joy down in Parky Cueve. I mean, it's always proved to be a good pitch for them.
I think they're unbeaten there.
Yeah. Played the French and Slovenia there and won both games. But also you have to take into account as well as the opposition that we don't have Denise O'Sullivan or Emily Murphy, who are the two players that have won player of the match for the last four games.
Not ideal.
No, not ideal. Not ideal at all. And Caitlin Hayes, I don't think, took part in training yesterday. Now, she did play the FA Cup final against City at the weekend with Brighton. So maybe there's a potential that her minutes were just being managed, but also it would seem strange for a player like her to fully not take part in training if she was going to play or play a part in the game tonight.
Ireland probably aren't going into that game with much sort of like they're definitely not favourites for the game. They're not complete outsiders, but even given the result in Netherlands where they were so close to victory and then they lost the game, they didn't even get a draw out of it.
Yeah.
That really puts it in your mind that, look, this is going to be a tough one for Ireland regardless.
Yeah, I think it will be. I think if you look at that game in Utrecht, I was over there for it. And we also didn't have Denise for that game because she was injured. And in the first half, it was so noticeable. Like, I actually felt bad watching Lucy Quinn. Trying to fill Denise O'Sullivan's boots is a hard job at the best of times.
But it's like a lack of control, really.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost like we were scared of the ball in that first half. And then I don't know what Carla Ward said at halftime or if it was someone else. The team came out looking totally different in the second half, and maybe if we had had a bit more of that for the full 90 minutes, we could have come out with a better result. But I remember talking to the players, the Caitlin Hayes and Anna Patton and a couple of others after that game, and they were devastated because they really felt like out of that window that we could have at least got a draw between the two games or a win. You know, we were close, and I suppose being on home soil, Páirc Uí Chaoimh has always been a good hunting ground for Ireland. You know, the crowds down there are always great. There's been a lot of talk this week about Carla Ward tightening the pitch to the smallest that she can per FIFA regulations. There is an opportunity there, but I think you would probably say that it would be a lot more comfortable if we had Emily Murphy, who is our most potent option in terms of scoring goals. And then, of course, Denise as well, just in terms of controlling that midfield. Now, the Dutch are also without the likes of Miedema and Jill Roord, which is two massive losses for them. But also in their place, they're able to bring in the likes of Esme Brutz, who just won a Champions League title with Barcelona. So, you know, the calibre is slightly different.
Pretty strong.
Who are we bringing in then in the attack with Emily Murphy out and Denise as well in the midfield?
I think Abby Larkin is probably the most likely to come in. And then with midfield, I think because Caitlin Hayes is potentially not going to play, I think they'll probably move Megan Connolly up into midfield and then put Jessie Stapleton in defence.
Okay.
Abby Larkin's a good option for runs in behind, at least.
Yeah.
Good bit of pace.
Like, I think we were talking about it on the Koi Gig podcast during the week, and I think Karen made this really good point where she was saying, you know, technically these games are kind of bonus territory for us. Now, Carla Ward and the team won't be looking at it like that, because if you're a proper competitive side, you want to go into every match and you want to win. But in terms of getting more minutes to players, like, it's a year until the next World Cup. Hopefully we're going to be there. There's a strong chance that we can qualify because we are in Ligue 1 and because of our playoff options. You know, there's so many different backdoors that we could potentially get there. These are maybe the sort of games where you should be getting the likes of Abby Larkin, maybe some of the younger players. You know, I think Ellen Dolan was another name that was mentioned. Someone like Jessie Stapleton, who hasn't had a lot of minutes this year. You kind of want to get the minutes into those sort of players now. And obviously Abby Larkin has gone to a World Cup already, so she knows what it's like. But at the same time, you want to develop them, you want to mature them, because by the time the World Cup comes around next year, you know, like, Katie will nearly be 32. Denise will also be, you know, mid-30s. And it's not that they're old or like they still won't have the same sort of control on the pitch, but we do kind of need to start thinking about bringing in those younger players. Yeah. And
there needs to be
them.
A new generation as well.
Yeah.
It's a new manager as well for Abby Larkin. So, you know, you have to get used to that as well. I mentioned Mary Harrington's piece in the Times here. This is with Katie McCabe, and it's essentially talking about her move to Chelsea from Arsenal and the abuse that she got. Carla Ward came out and was pretty strong on
the fact that it's just not warranted, and calling Katie McCabe a traitor is something that probably isn't going to help with the relationship with Arsenal fans at all.
No.
Also in this piece with Mary Harrington is some talk of the fact that Arsenal offered Katie McCabe a new deal around January. It offered her a one-year contract. Her father, Gary, described it as an insult.
Yeah.
Is it an insult? She's 30 years old. Arsenal are sort of describing this move as like, you know, Katie's a depreciating asset, which is, you know, not the best way to talk about a club legend in the first place. But
no.
She's not exactly decrepit. She's not exactly 35, 36, 37.
No.
She's 30 years old and naturally an athlete anyway, and also an intelligent player who can play multiple positions. So you have to think that over the next 3-4 years at least, she could develop into one of those older, smart players who could play anywhere for you.
Yeah, I think she kind of already is there. You know, like you look at when she was at Arsenal for 11 years, you know, she came into the league, went off on loan to Glasgow. That was really the making of her. And since then, she has been one of the most consistent Arsenal players of all time, really. You know, it's not like she's the sort of player that's coming on 60 minutes into a game to kind of help you control or dominate, or the sort of player that you're taking off after 60 minutes because she just doesn't have it in her legs anymore. You know, she can play any position. She's played the majority of minutes for Arsenal over the last couple of seasons. Like, I think last season she played every minute in the Champions League and practically every minute she could. I think there may have been a suspension or something that she didn't play in the WSL. I don't know where this narrative from within Arsenal came, that, as you said, the kind of idea that she was a depreciating asset. Because whenever you listen to Renee Slegers talk about her, that doesn't really seem to be her opinion of Katie as a player. And the fact that she can go to Chelsea, she's been offered, I think it's a 3-year deal plus a 12-month extension if she or them decide that that's what they want to go to. Like, that's a very, very rare thing in women's football to get a deal of that length
right.
at any age. You know, maybe if you're 20 and you're like the next hottest thing, you might. But at the same time, the majority of deals that you get in the league are like 2-year deals. So the fact that they're seeing her as a player within an absolutely stacked Chelsea squad until she's potentially 34, 35 says a lot about how they value her, and the fact that they have been chasing her for so long as well. You know, she said herself that she's been talking to them since before the Champions League quarterfinal, which, funny enough, was against Chelsea. And of course, had that iconic incident where Katie pulled Liz Thompson's hair and didn't get sent off, and Chelsea fans were raging for months on end about it. But, you know, you don't attract that sort of attention without being a highly valued player. And I think Arsenal were potentially surprised about the backlash that came whenever there were rumours that she was going to leave. And that's why they kind of did this one about whenever it was the last minute and offered her a deal on practically the last day of the season. Like, to me, I would be insulted about that. I think the way the club treated her, as such a legend that she is, appallingly, like, there are very few players that have a mural outside the Emirates, and she is one of them, right. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, look, maybe the clubs have learned from mistakes of the men's teams in the past, and they're getting ahead of the game in terms of depreciating assets and selling players on at their highest value, or selling players on when they're when they're going to start decreasing value. But it seems very early doors for the WSL teams to start acting like the Premier League side, selling their top players when they get to the age of 30.
Well, they didn't even sell her, that's the thing. They let her go on a free transfer. But also, that, to be fair, that is a bit different in terms of the profile of the women's game, where a lot of the time it actually makes more sense to get as much as you can out of a player rather than the money, because the money isn't the same way that it is in the men's game. But yeah, no, I would agree. To me, even when I look at the sort of players that they're talking about bringing into Arsenal during this transfer window, you know, like Ona Bagie, George Sanway, they're incredible players, but I still don't think they're Katie McCabe.
Yeah.
You know, I think considering what she knows about the club, how long she's been there, how well she has adapted to the style of the club, the fact that you can throw her in at absolutely any position and she'll do it. You know, she's practically like a Mia Hamm. You could throw her in goal if you needed in a crucial World Cup game and she would probably do a job for you. It really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. At the very least, for her sake, I wish they had given her a better send-off than they did. You know, the fact that she didn't even get a home game at the Emirates to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And it ended up being at Anfield was really bad.
That's why the reaction from Arsenal fans is a little surprising here. That
Chelsea did really bait them with the announcement, I have to say.
That's Chelsea, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Like
the whole thing is so unfortunate, though, because not that her legacy is affected in any way, but probably the feeling a lot of fans, particularly those based in London, probably have towards her is skewed now, which is just a shame, like, because she's done so much for the club. She's been there her whole career, essentially. It doesn't taint her whatsoever, but yeah, just the feeling that Chelsea or Arsenal fans have around her, unfortunately, will be skewed now.
I will say that Arsenal fans and women's football fans are just a different type of person. You know, they go feral very, very quickly whenever it comes to players. They'll defend them to the death, but also they can turn very quickly. And the level of abuse is very different. Like, it gets personal in a different way to men's football very, very quickly, because I think because the league hasn't hit maybe the same sort of heights in terms of how big it is, player fans feel that they almost have an ownership over the players in a different way, and an ownership over their personal lives and an ownership over what they do with their careers. And I think that's why things descended into the levels of chaos and abuse we saw this week. You know, like, there's obviously, I'm an Arsenal fan, lost Champions League final and lost, like, in my head, one of the greatest Irish players of all time and also one of my favourite Arsenal players in the space of a day. Obviously, I was disappointed, but at no point was I like, I'm going to go online now and I'm going to abuse Katie McCabe because she has personally ruined my weekend.
Yeah. So you're telling me that Kathleen Mack 356789 wasn't you?
No, that's my alter ego.
Also on the back papers today is some pictures of Fergus Slattery, a former Ireland rugby player who sadly passed away. Jerry Thornley has in the Times, a colossus who never forgot where it all began. Fergus Slattery went on to make 61 appearances, which Jerry says is around 150 caps in today's
hard to come by back
rugby.
Then.
And something that really stands out from the tributes that are being written about Slattery over the last day or two is about his generosity and how much he gave back to where he came from. He gave, as Jerry Thornley reports here, give pretty much everything that he earned from the BBC to Blackrock Rugby Club. And for yourself, Dara, he also was quite the philanthropist towards UCD, where he also played.
So he would have played schools rugby in Blackrock and then went to UCD for college and played in UCD. And even though he went back to Blackrock College, the club, he still fundraised, you know, throughout his whole life for UCD and remained very tight with people he would have played with and the higher ups in UCD rugby. And even till the last few years of his life, I know he's been struggling with dementia for the last 7 years. I think his diagnosis was 2019. But up to that point, was still very involved in UCD as well, even though it wasn't his club anymore. And yeah, and like, you can talk about all that, but he was an absolutely cracking player. You mentioned like he's former Ireland rugby player. He is one of the former Ireland rugby players. Like, he is one of the greatest of all time, without a doubt. You know, you listen to how some of his former Lions teammates talk about him. Like, he's not just one of the best Irish rugby players of all time. He's one of the best back rows the world's ever seen. And in the generation that really transformed the game as well. Like, you think about that Barbarians game in 1973 with the All Blacks, and he played that game and he was a part of, you know, the Gareth Edwards try, which is obviously down as probably the best try of all time, but then also one of the best tries that never happened ever. He throws the American football pass to Dawes, which is disallowed after before it was cool, before Stuart McCluskey did it. So he's a big hand in that kind of generation that, you know, really, I suppose, kicked rugby on and made it a popular sport in the UK and Ireland. And yeah, like Jerry was saying in his piece there this morning, 61 caps, seems like a decent amount, but it's not representative of the influence he would have had back then. Like, a lot of caps weren't actually recognised and very hard to come by. The matches were far less frequent than they are now. So, an absolute titan of the game, and very sad news there during the week.
Yeah, Triple Crown winner, 1982, yeah. Played for Ireland for 14 years, captain Ireland, 18 occasions, yeah. Also played for the British and Irish Lions in a tour in New Zealand and South Africa as well. So a real titan of the game. And it's good that he was recognised before.
Yeah, he got his flowers, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Turned 2007, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, that's what the Hall of Fame is really for, is to give recognition to these types of players. Whereas now, you know, it kind of turns into a bit of a farce.
Yeah.
At times. Whereas this is what it's for, is to remember people like Fergus Slattery.
Yeah, and listening to Leo Cullen yesterday, chat about him a bit on his press conference as well. Like, the influence he's had on, you know, that generation of players, I think, continues on, because he gets spoken about in those type of dressing rooms as like a founder of modern Irish rugby, essentially. And yeah, I don't think his legacy will be forgotten anytime soon.
Surprising lack of Katie Taylor in the back pages. I suppose she dominated the back pages yesterday, but there is a press conference today. I know everyone pretty much knows about the fight at this stage because it was leaked yesterday, but it is being officially announced that she's going to be fighting in Croke Park. And it was also confirmed yesterday that her opponent is going to be Flora Pila. So we spoke about it on yesterday's papers and yesterday's news round. We did mention kind of offhand that maybe Michael Conlon would consider coming out of retirement for this fight and he would be a big draw. And Michael Conlon did confirm to us yesterday that he would 100% come out of retirement if the deal was right.
This is very exciting.
For this fight. So Michael Conlon confirming to us exclusively that he would be willing to come out of retirement to fight on in the undercard of Katie Taylor. He did kind of name drop Warrington as the person he might want to fight.
I'd love to see that.
I think that
I'd
would be a draw.
To see that.
That would be a draw for that 100%. Undercard.
Yeah.
Eddie Hearn is a fan of the show, so you should get on to him quickly and drop him a DM and say, you know, we've set up your undercard for you.
Well, Matthew Brennan's actually going to be at that press conference, so
there you go.
He's going to put it to Eddie Hearn, so we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Are you someone who thinks this fight is going to sell out pretty easily, or where do you fall in it?
I was talking to my dad about this the other night, because I turned 30 this year and I was doing some pre-birthday planning, and I was like, by the way, if you want to buy me a present, Katie Taylor is potentially fighting in Croke Park this year.
What's your price point for that?
I don't know. That's the thing. I think, like, keep it affordable would kind of be my thing. Like, I think this should be, I don't think this is about making money for any sides. You know, I think this is like a showpiece event. It's giving Katie her flowers, it's giving her her moment in the sun in, you know, what is one of the greatest stadiums in my mind in Europe in general. And I think that it's not that you necessarily need to have it as, you know, €5 tickets or something like that, but, you know, keep it as to what you would go to an average match for, that sort of level. And then obviously you'll have your corporate and your premium or whatever. I think if they had done it the last time she wanted to fight in Croke Park, it probably would have sold out quicker than potentially this one will.
Right.
I think I could be totally wrong, and I hope I am, because I hope it's a complete sellout and I hope it's an amazing crowd for her. But it just feels like maybe some of the momentum has been lost a little bit. I don't know. What do you think? You look unconvinced.
You can get that back though, can't you? Like, I don't know. I might be on my own here, but I do think that this is such a cultural significant moment that people are going to want to go to this. Regardless.
I just think,
like, this is not a boxing event. This is a
Irish sporting event. No, I think this is the sort of thing that you want to say in like 40 years time. I saw Katie Taylor box in Croke Park. You know, it's that sort of significance. And
it's her last ever fight as well. Like,
yeah.
I just think they need to be really careful with the price. The prices for tickets is so important.
Westmeath says in the comments that Eddie Hearn wouldn't be doing this unless tickets were at least 150, 200 euro.
Well, if they do that, then they're going to get 40-odd thousand. They're not going to sell out the stadium.
Yeah.
It's too expensive.
What is the capacity for Croker if it's a boxing event rather than a game? Like, will there be people on the pitch and the stands?
There'll definitely be people on the pitch. I don't know if they'll open up all the stands.
Yeah.
They definitely won't well, I'm not, I don't want to say definitively, but I would be surprised if they opened up the hill.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to work. Yeah, they worked that, yeah.
It all depends, I suppose, how they set up the ring as well, if they put it into the middle of the pitch,
if it's like,
or do they
gates.
Do it in the same way as they did it with like the Oasis concerts, where they put it where the hill is and then they face everyone towards it? That would be a bit odd, though.
Yeah.
So you'd imagine, look, boxing at stadiums is generally a terrible spectacle when you're there.
Well, that's the other thing about this as well. You know, you don't really want to be, you know, in the gods watching this and paying like €300-400
people,
for it.
People will do that to say they went there, though. That is the thing.
100%. You know, like when I think about going, it's not necessarily because I think I'm going to like get a really good up close and personal look at Katie Taylor fighting. Like it is for the event. It is for the spectacle of getting to say, I saw her retirement fight. Hopefully she goes out on a win. You know, she is such an icon, both of the Irish sporting world and the global world. You know, we wouldn't have women's boxing without Katie Taylor. And I think that's something that people actually forget. Like, she created a sport. How many Irish sports people do we have that we can say actually created a sport and put it on the sort of level where people like Eddie Hearn will actually pay attention and will actually push their money into it?
Mm. Dermot Keenan is saying, Jesus, the ring will be in the middle of the pitch. Has Enda not seen boxing matches at Wembley before? I think I just said the ring will be in the middle of like, I was throwing the thing about the hill in as like superfluous nonsense, really. It's obviously going to be in the middle.
Literally nothing.
We're just trying to fill minutes here, guys.
Nothing in Katie Taylor's career has come easy. Like, she literally has to fight for everything. Like, you're mentioning the fight to get, you know, women's sports or women's boxing sanctioned. She finally gets her fight in Croke Park, which she's been fighting for years, and now it's like, well, is she going to sell it out though? I don't think so. So like nothing has come easy for her. So I think they just need to get the ticket prices right. That's the biggest thing. People talk about the undercard. I think that's important, but I don't think it's as important.
Yeah, I think boxing fans are making more of the undercard because they care about what the undercard's going to be, as opposed
to... That's fair enough.
Like, the vast majority of the people are going to want to go to this game will not be boxing fans. They'll be just Irish sporting fans and Katie Taylor fans. And
now, you do need Irish on the undercard. You do need
100%.
Some homegrown fighters that, you know,
you need the
will bring their own
crowd
as well. Yeah,
sports crowd.
Yeah.
And to get the boxing crowd, you do need Irish fighters.
Yeah, it's a collaboration.
Yeah.
They need to work together here.
What Johnny, do you think is an acceptable price point then for tickets?
I think a reasonable... I might sound out of June here, but I think a reasonable price point for this would be 80 to 100 euro.
For, see, like, what tier are we talking here?
For a regular ticket.
I think that's a lot.
I would have thought it would be around that sort of mark.
Yeah, that's how much concert tickets cost in Croke Park. You can't... Well, this fight wouldn't be happening if Eddie Hearn wasn't going to make a little bit of money. Croke Park is famously expensive to host...
Yeah,
these things on, and that's what the holdup has been for this fight coming through.
I do think he'll get a lot of credit from this, though, at the same time. Like, obviously he wants to make money, but this is like a legacy thing for him as well to have made this happen, because it at one point seemed like it was impossible and it just wasn't going to happen.
He's not the sort of man who takes no lightly. You know, I think it almost made him more determined when Croke Park were like, don't really know if we can host that. So it's a bit of expensive for us. I feel like that just kind of was like a red flag to a bull.
Mm. World Cup is coming up next week. Are you excited? Who's your team? We were asking this yesterday.
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. I think I'm in the same boat as everyone else whenever it comes to major tournaments. You have very little feeling towards it, especially if you don't have a team, aka Ireland, in it, and you're like, oh, it's not like it used to be, and then it starts and you're like, oh my god, I love football, I can't believe we get to watch like four matches a day, and it gets to the latter stages and all of a sudden you're not watching constant football and you're sad about it. Who is my team?
A lot of people were saying Scotland.
Yeah, well, like, you're obviously always gonna support your Celtic neighbours in these things, but I feel like it's the sort of thing that once it starts, I'll take a fancy to one of the smaller teams that I didn't even contemplate before. like I'm going to be working some shifts during it, so I'm looking forward to staying up until ridiculous hours of the night writing about football, getting all too invested in some tiny African nation that I suddenly want to go all the way.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I won't be staying up for the 2 o'clock games.
You said Scotland, didn't you?
I said Scotland and Japan are my two.
Yeah.
Japan, because obviously they've got the Celtic connection, but also they're a really fun side to watch. They were brilliant at the last World Cup and surprised a lot of people. And it's also the football they play is fantastic.
Yeah.
Real high pressing, high intensity, as you'd expect with some of the profile of player that they have.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to them. We are going to be looking ahead to the World Cup at about 8:30. It's just gone 8 o'clock here on Off the Ball Breakfast. That's us done with the papers. Tommy Walsh is coming up after this to look ahead to the Leinster Hurling Championship final between Galway and Dublin this weekend. We'll also chat a little bit about Derek Ling stepping aside from the Kilkenny job earlier this week. Kathleen, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.